The hour of 8 a.m. having arrived, I'm calling to order Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections. Is Representative Gardner here? Is Representative Faust?
We need two more. Check out size real quick.
Representative Howell's here. Representative Faust, either you start or we're going to someone else. There's your choice.
If somebody else is ready, then I'll go.
Representative Peterson, I hope she is here after the voluminous, ominous meetings I've had with her.
It obviously works.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And there is the read-all amendment that is coming around.
Representative Peterson, I will move that House File 2983 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. We don't have a quorum yet, I don't think, or do we? Representative Howes was here, he checked in. Not yet. So, Representative Peterson, why don't you speak to the DE7 amendment, which deletes everything in the bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I'm pleased to be here this morning to introduce the top priority for the Early Childhood Caucus leadership team. And they knew that we need to start a strong foundation for children beginning at birth to five. And so we're advocating for an office that many other states, in fact, about 28 of them, have already created. And the document you have in front of you contains also the recommendations of the federal government regarding the Head Start Act, and it recommends that the governor establish a state advisory council on early childhood education and care from children from birth to five. So the second part of the legal amendment you have talks about that advisory council that is also mandated by at least recommended by federal law. And also in that federal recommendation is the recommendation that there be an individual to coordinate activities as a state advisory council. And we've expanded this concept a bit and created an office that would coordinate the work of the Departments of Education and Health and Human Services. And this bill, as you can see with the delete all amendment, establishes an Office of Early Learning to coordinate high-quality pre-kindergarten and child care programs, and it directs the governor to appoint a qualified director of the Office of Early Learning. And then it lists the duties of the director related to facilitating communications and coordinating pre-kindergarten and child care programs under the administration of the Departments of Education and Human Services. It also directs the Office of Early Learning to annually report to the legislature by February 1st on the status of the work and any statutory changes needed to improve program quality and increase program access. The benefits of this office include that it creates a focus on the importance of the birth to 5 years by having a single office in state government to focus on issues related to these early years. It develops a seamless governance system for early childhood. It streamlines the funding sources and cuts out duplication of services. And I might emphasize again, creates efficiency in many of the particular discrete programs. It enables the departments and the array of early childhood programs to work together more efficiently, and this will be particularly important in the Department of Education, the Department of Health and Human Services. There needs to be more coordination and, again, more looking at the services that they provide and providing that kind of continuity that is needed. It creates better accountability across the programs. It could be an effective clearinghouse for up-to-date, accessible information on early childhood and care for all stakeholders. It enhances the ability of early ed programs to deliver high-quality services by streamlining administrative requirements, providing educational opportunities, and supporting efficient and effective business practices in state government. It builds on the strengths of the current system, minimizes weaknesses, and maximizes resources, provides timely and comprehensive information to the governor and the legislature for cohesive decision-making. It would develop and manage an effective data collection system to support the necessary functions of a coordinated system of early education and care in order to enable accurate evaluation of its impact. It would work for more effective federal compliance, and last but not least, coordinate and facilitate both public and private programs involved with the early childhood area. And we think it is an office whose time has come. It is moving through the Senate, has passed through committees there. The Senate bill is being carried by Senator Clark and Terry Bonoff.
Representative Peterson, we have a quorum, so I'm going to move that the DE7 amendment, which you just described. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson, how does this differ from the attempt that was made to have the Department of Family, Children, and Learning? It seems we've been there once before, and it didn't work, and now we're going back. Is this baby steps, or?
Well, Mr. Chair. If you talk with people who were part of that effort in the Department of Children, Families, and Learning, they will not say it didn't work. I think they thought it was working quite well. But, developing a discrete program for early learning is incremental. It takes time. And I think this is a little bit different in that it is much more confined to just the early learning programs, and so it would pull out those discrete programs and create a separate office. It wouldn't be the whole, all of the programs in public health and all of the programs in health and human services. It would deal with those that deal with early learning. And again, this first year would be a process of planning, looking at what does work, what we could pull together, and probably co-locate an office in following years, but it would enable someone to come in to look at the situation, to facilitate, communicate, and come back with a recommendation.
Representative Peterson, this bill's gone through how many committees so far?
Two.
And it was amended how many times?
It was amended in the first committee. In the second committee, we laid it on the table to be able to bring it to GovOps, to the floor, and then to GovOps. And so the amendment was presented, but it wasn't voted on because it was laid on the table.
And this is the first delete everything amendment? Is this the first delete everything amendment?
No.
Will it be the last delete everything amendment to the bill?
For me, it will be. I don't know what happens when the Senate and the House get together and begin to discuss this.
And Representative Peterson, is there a fiscal note to this bill? Do we
No.
have an idea of the cost of this thing?
At this point, there's no fiscal note.
All right. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, you anticipated my question. Thank you very much. Let me clarify, Representative Peterson, you're not saying there is no cost. You're saying we have no fiscal notes detailing the cost.
There's no appropriation. There's certainly, you could certainly find a fiscal note if you looked at the amount of this position, but we're saying no appropriation.
So, Representative Peterson, you've asked for no appropriation, but there has been no fiscal note prepared at this time. What would the Department of Education say about this? Is someone from the department here today? Does the department support the bill? Let me start with that one. Does the department support the bill?
I will let them respond, Mr.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michelle Weber, and I am the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education.
And I just walked in the door, so this is, I'm assuming this is Representative Peterson's Office of Early Learning. We have been...
Ms. Weber, this is a delete everything, and I don't know if you've seen the delete everything, if that makes a difference. You can testify to the concept. I'm not thrilled about testifying to concepts, but we would prefer to deal with bills, but that's okay.
Some of the discussion that we've been having with Representative Peterson is with respect to the office and whether or not creating a position will achieve what she desires to achieve. We also do believe that this will have some cost to it. We've been working on a fiscal note on the first, I don't believe we've done one on the delete all amendment. But we've been... yeah, we've been working with Representative Peterson and also with Senator
Ms. Weber, what would a fiscal note be on this bill in a ballpark number? Six figures?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I believe if it's a position and benefits and then perhaps some staffing-related costs, it would be a slightly over $100,000.
All right. Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I was going to say the same. It will be over $100,000, probably with the advisory committee. Probably closer to $140,000.
And Ms. Weber, the refrain we've heard from departments up to this point is you'll just absorb that.
Mr. Chair, we are facing a 4% budget cut according to the governor's recommendation, so absorbing it would be challenging.
Thank you. I appreciate that answer. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, this was in finance before it came here, is that correct?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, it went to the E-12 policy and then to early childhood finance.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, which finance committee would this go to next? Would this have to come to K-12 finance?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding it would not need to come to K-12 finance because this is the early. It went to the Early Childhood Finance Committee.
Okay. Representative Peterson, assuming there is going to be some type of fiscal bills for the divisions or perhaps one large fiscal bill, it would have to be in that bill. I would doubt whether anything costing... I know it doesn't sound like a lot, $100,000, but even that, going to the floor alone, would be unlikely. It would have to be wrapped in some of the fiscal bills, either the K-12 or an omnibus finance bill. It's going to go back to finance, where it will go down into the bowels of the numerous finance committees that we have, and I'm sure it will be erupted out of there at some point, but in some fashion. Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what you're asking me.
Well, I'm asking if we send it back to finance, it's going to have to come out of there in some way. And,
and
my observations are probably going to be pretty. But, all right, do we have anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill or ask any questions on the bill? Ms. Weber, do you have anything else to say on the bill as far as the combination of these areas?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the department is very committed to working with both the early childhood programs that are located at the department and the child care programs at the Department of Human Services, as well as other initiatives out there. So we acknowledge the importance of working together and have been striving to do that.
Any further questions by members of the committee? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2983 is amended, be recommended to pass, and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill's on its way.
I would like to thank the committee and the chair for hearing this bill.
Thank you. President Faust, do you have your...
Yes.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Members, there's a sheet prepared, I think, by Mr. Shepard
that lists the bills and the areas that we're concerned with. If you note, House File 3596, the areas that we're looking at is on that particular sheet. So if we could focus our attention on those areas. Representative Faust, I'm going to move that House File 3596 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. So Representative Faust, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I do have a delete all amendment. It is DE1, please.
The DE1? I will move the DE1 amendment. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Faust, to your bill as amended.
Thank you very much. What the original bill did was basically prohibit the Education Commissioner or her department from writing any more rules. And when we discussed this in the Education Policy Commission, she referred to that as hunting a mouse with a machine gun. And so we sat down with her and worked out a compromise bill that I think is a much better for everybody. And as part of the compromise, the commissioner has agreed to pull back the rules that are currently at the administrative law judge, and we'll send out only the rules. And what the amendment does is allows them to expedite, that's a hard word at this time in the morning. Expedite.
You've had trouble with that word the last couple of days. So, you're not alone.
All right. Good. They will expedite the process on the rules that are required to go into place to conform with federal law, but only those rules. They also have agreed to go back, not just in the future, but also go back over all the rules that have been sent out over the last 10 years and make sure that they have not exceeded their authority in writing policy rather than interpreting policy. And as well as that, going forward in the future, the commissioner has promised me that she is going to make sure that the rule creep that is what has been referred to as what's been going on, that she will address that and fix that problem. The rule writing was referred to what is currently happening, or what has been happening, as an 8-lane highway with cars going 90 miles an hour as fast as they can. And what really is necessary is a 2-lane highway with toll booths on it. And so you can see that my original bill really put a stop sign right in the middle of each lane and was really a little bit of an overkill, but we have now come up with what we feel is a very reasonable compromise, and I take the commissioner's word for it that she's going to address the problem and fix the problem. She's an honest and honorable person, and I'm more than happy to take her word on fixing this problem. In addition to what the amended bill does, in addition to expediting the process, it also takes out two statutes that the department is having a tough time writing rules on. One of them deals with positive behaviors, and the other one deals with timeout rooms. And so they tried to write rules on those, and they really had a difficult time, and they asked us if we would pull those back, and either the legislature or a task force figure out what the rules of those things should be. So that's what the amended bill is, as well as what we have accomplished with this bill. And I have with me Charlie Kite.
Representative Powell, before Mr. Kite speaks, the delete everything amendment that you have, this committee has had several contacts from around the state with the Department of Education making rules by memo. Now, does the delete everything amendment address the problem of the department issuing a memo and in effect saying they've then issued a rule? Does your delete everything address that problem?
The delete all does not, and that's where the commissioner has given me her word that she will fix that problem. And like I said, I'm willing to trust her and take her at her word that she will address that issue and fix that problem.
Representative Faust, it isn't the answer that I wanted, so we'll proceed. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Our association represents all the superintendents in the state and the majority of the special ed directors. Expedite, by the way, is a word they're having trouble with in the education committees, too. So, with all
of that, I'll try to go very quick. Take care of that.
Proceed. I'll go very quickly. For the schools, we have been caught between constant proration of dollars for special education, and at the same time, a constant parade of new both rules and, as your chair mentions, memos that come out that every one of them increase the cost of doing operations. So dollars are going down, costs are going up, and it's to the point where it's literally almost a crisis. Well, it's not almost a crisis, it is a crisis. That's what that spurred us to ask Representative Faust to help us with this particular bill. I am hopeful that this compromise language will work. There's a good faith pullback of some rules. There's a good faith promise by the commissioner to try to get on top of this issue that seems to be centered mostly in the special ed divisions of the Department of Education. If we can get the memo creep and the rule creep to stop, so be it. If we can't, we'll be back next year with the original bill.
Mr. Kite, I'm going to ask you the same question. We have the Delete Everything Amendment in front of us. Does the Delete Everything Amendment address, because some of the contacts to this committee have come from members of your organization. So are they supportive? Are you supportive then of this amendment? This amendment, according to Representative Faust, does not stop the issuing of memos that, in effect, the department has termed rules. And all we have is a good faith by the commissioner that it's going to stop. So do you support the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we do support this. We know that this is a significant compromise, and this is somewhat of a handshake agreement on the side to get the behavior to change. We're willing to try that for a year. We'd be more comfortable if it was stronger, but we also have to try to make things work with our department.
Well, Mr. Kite, if this doesn't work, and the next time a member of your organization contacts me, and there is a memo or a move by the department to put a rule in effect, I'm going to answer with your testimony, just to make it perfectly clear. So you know how I will answer.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's fine. We intend to monitor this very closely. Every directive coming from the department will be collected by us, and we'll be looking at them. And if there's any that are adding costs unnecessarily or not mandated by federal law, we'll have a significant problem with this as well. Thank you.
Is there someone from the department that can testify to this? It looks like this is her day. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Michelle Weber, Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you on this. As a result of Representative Faust's bill, we've been talking quite frequently with members who have his constituency group who has asked him to bring forward the bill as well as the amendment. The commissioner has already commissioned the agency to pull all of the memos that or anything that we have issued for the last 10 years, and we are doing a thorough review to see what is the basis under which those memos were issued. Is there law that supports the issuance of the memo, things of that nature. So far, we were provided with one memo when we met with Representative Faust and some of his constituents that identified their concern. They also were concerned with the rulemaking process, so we brought that back. And the commissioner has now instructed staff that she will personally be reviewing and speaking with them about any memos that are issued to make sure that we are not overstepping our bounds.
Ms. Weber, I'd appreciate if you are communicating on the issuance of those memos that you copy my committee on that. We have received more inquiries on this than I care to list. And if this isn't stopped, we'll be revisiting this issue in another way.
Mr. Chair, I will bring that back to the department, and we will indicate that you and your committee members will be CC'd.
Commissioner Segrin.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify in this bill? There was a question. Representative Olson. Representative Olson.
Thank you.
So the bill is amended then, Representative Olson?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask Representative Faust or Mr. Kite, either one, if they could explain exactly what is the compromise here.
Representative Faust.
Yeah, the compromise is that they pulled back the recently released rules that are currently at the administrative law judge, and they're going to go over the rules that they've issued over the last 10 years and make sure that they haven't crossed the line. Legislature is supposed to write policy. Department is supposed to interpret that policy. It's the belief of most of the people in Charlie Kite's group, the superintendent's group, that they have crossed that line significantly in the past, and especially on the rules that are now at the administrative law judge. So by pulling all of those rules back, by looking at the rules in the past, we're hoping that we're going to fix a lot of the problems that those crossing the bounds have caused in the past. In addition to that, they are going to make sure that the commissioner has promised that she will address this issue going forward and that they will take care of the problem internally. And I understand, Mr. Chair, your concerns with this, and I know there's a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that like the original bill a lot better. But, I have to trust the commissioner. I believe that she's an honest and honorable person. I trust her. I believe that she will do her best to control this problem, and that is what the real compromise is. And Superintendent Kite said, if that doesn't happen, we'll be back next year with the original bill.
Well, Representative Paulson, if it doesn't happen, we'll be inundated with more requests, and I'll be wondering why we had this hearing. But Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for communicating the concerns that you have for us on behalf of the committee.
All right.
Mr. Chair, if I may, also with respect to your question, Representative Olson, the department was specifically directed in statute to adopt the rules that are currently under discussion, and so the repeal language then provides us the opportunity to not go through the rulemaking process and not adopt the rules as we were instructed in statute.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Potts, can you tell me the status of this bill in the Senate in language? Is the language in the Senate bill the amendments that we adopted, or is the language in the Senate bill the bill as it originally was introduced?
I think that Brad Lundell would have a better idea than I would. I believe that they have adopted the same language that we currently have, but I'm not positive.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell here today on behalf of the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. Last night, the Senate Full Education Committee put out its policy, omnibus policy bill, and this amendment, this bill as amended in its current form, is part of that policy bill.
All right. Any further questions from members of the committee? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kalin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering maybe for Ms. Weber, the fiscal implications. It sounds like there was a lot of rigmarole, especially now for in front of an ALJ for an extended period of time, for rules that won't be adopted, and for not having to adopt those rules, but then entertaining an expedited process for another set of rules. I mean, I think I'm wondering if there are some savings here to the department, and if we shouldn't be looking a little more further at the rulemaking process as we're trying to find some savings to balance the budget here.
Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have not yet done a cost analysis of the current rules that we run in the process of adopting and what that cost was. I don't have that information. The expedited rule process we are planning to absorb within the agency as part of this agreement. So,
Ms. Weber, you're going down the path of absorption again. So this will be absorbed, but the previous bill unlikely will not be absorbed.
Mr. Chair, the rulemaking that we are asking for expedited authority to do is actually at the requirement of the federal IDEA law, and we receive federal administrative funds, so the state would not be paying for that rulemaking process.
President Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Weber, I think that goes back to my question. I'm hoping that that we don't just absorb savings, that we actually put some numbers here. If the feds are paying for the expedited process and we're not having to continue with rulemaking under the repealer, or Article 3, Section 16, I have it here, but that I do hope that we can actually start to quantify those savings and that we don't just absorb it, that they actually do end up on the bottom line.
Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Anyone else wish to testify on the bill? Then I'll renew my motion that House File 3596 is amended, be recommended to pass, and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Is that Sam Gardner here?
Yes, sir.
No. All right. Enzel?
Representative Vangelis, are you? Come on down. I'll move that House File 3328 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Representative, see your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3328 is a forestry bill which comes as a result of a group of stakeholders that Commissioner Holston of the Department of Natural Resources put together in the summer of 07. And what this bill does is it puts into statute what is commonly referred to as the Forest Legacy Program by creating the Minnesota Forests for the Future program. The genesis of this is to protect and manage previously privately owned forest land, which is in danger of becoming overly developed, and the parcelization of Minnesota's forests, predominantly in the north, the northern counties. Priorities will be given to protecting forest land in the north of 5,000 acres or more, and in central and southern Minnesota, tracts of forest land of 100 acres or more. And the idea is to protect these forest lands for sustainable forestry practices, for recreational uses, timber productivity, and ecological and wildlife values as well. This bill has worked its way through the process, through the Environment and Natural Resources Committees. It has not received any controversy. And joining me at the table is Mr. Marty Vadas, Director of Lands and Minerals from the Department of Natural Resources. And we'll stand for questions.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record, and could you spell your last name, too, please?
Mr. Chairman, good morning. My name is Marty Vadas, and that's V-A-B-I-S, and I'm the director of DNR Lands and Minerals Division.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Vadas, we have two areas that we're concerned about in this bill. Subdivision 8, authorizing the commissioner of the DNR to establish an advisory team, and Subdivision 13 that provides for easements agreed to under this section. It would appear that there is going to be a cost. Is this another one of the departments absorbing the cost, or isn't there a cost to this?
Mr. Chairman, on Subdivision 8, the idea is to form an advisory team of people that are knowledgeable about this issue, and the intention would be that that would be a voluntary advisory committee with no compensation and with no mileage or that sort of thing.
All right. And would there be any other, with the other sections, any related costs?
Mr. Chair, obviously, to purchase these conservation easements, there would need to be an appropriation to do that. And in the bonding bill, I believe there is an appropriation for that purpose. And that would be the cost for this program is actually.
So the department isn't looking at absorbing anything here?
Mr. Chairman, there would be work to conduct easement or appraisals and that sort of thing. The intention would be those would be contracted out. And obviously, someone would need to work on this program and work through the process and administer it. And existing staff would be sufficient to conduct that.
Any further discussion? Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anzalt, what's the reason for the rulemaking exemption in Subdivision 13?
Representative Anzalt.
I'll defer to Mr. Vadas.
Mr. Vadas?
Mr. Chairman, the intention is that in lieu of rulemaking, this bill would establish this program and set up the criteria for selection of conservation easements, set up the application process, set up ways to correct such things as boundary line errors. So the belief is that this bill would be sufficient to move forward with this program, and rulemaking wouldn't be necessary.
President Winkler, anything else?
Mr. Chair, I wanted to comment that we seem to be busy in this committee approving exemption from rulemaking, which is the same thing as saying exempting decision-making from public input.
Sen. Winkler, an excellent point. Any further discussion? Anyone else wish to testify to the bill? Seeing no one, I'll renew my motion that House File 3328 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gardner, is he? There he is. Okay, he's back.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. We may have an issue here with the version of the bill, 3238. We should have the second engrossment and not the first one. And
all right.
If we use the first one, it's going to lead to a lot of confusion. I don't know if you want to take somebody else before we get that straightened out.
If we don't have the right engrossment, we'll keep moving down the... Mr. Shepard? We need the other. All right. Okay, we'll have to get the second engrossment. So if you'll just hold on, we'll keep moving down the line. Representative Dill is here. Representative Dill, I'm told this has to go back to finance. All right. So I will move that House File 3068 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Representative Dill, to your bill.
And I have two bills, Mr. Chairman. You said 3068 we're on right now?
I'm sorry, 3068.
All right. Yep. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is a streamlining bill, members. Over the years, as these programs have developed, whether it be ATVs, watercraft, dirt bikes, snowmobiles, the stickers that you have to buy, the licenses you have to buy, there are a variety of different ones. What we're doing is trying, in the case of snowmobiles, to get them to all expire on the same day. There's a trail sticker that expires at the end of April. The registration sticker that's on the same snowmobile changes it. It expires on June 30th. And one thing that happened in the field this year with this new trail sticker is someone bought a trail sticker in, let's say, January or February of 07. It says on the trail sticker that it expires April 1st of 07. It has a big 07 right on it. And so then the person went snowmobiling in December 07, and he was out on the trail, and the conservation officer gave him a citation because his trail sticker expired in April. And he said, wait a minute, it says 07, it's still 07. So you can see the problem. So by moving that trail sticker to June 30th, so that everything coincides. Same with the dealer registration. So all things would expire in June 30th. In the case of temporary certificates. Another problem occurred is that the dealer would give a snowmobile registration temporary certificate. The snowmobiler would put it on their person. They would go out. They have 10 days to get to receive the regular registration. And you have to buy a trail sticker. So you can register a snowmobile, but you can't ride it on a trail unless you have a trail sticker. So the dealers were riding on the registration form that trail sticker paid. And a conservation officer stopped, a very efficient conservation officer, stopped a person and gave them a citation because there was no evidence that they had paid for it other than the dealer's signature saying, and the conservation officer claimed that he could have, that the customer could have written that on there. So this establishes on the registration a place where they can check it off and show how much they paid and put the dealer's phone number and their address so that it can be checked and followed through to make sure that somebody's not doing something wrong.
Representative Dill, I'm going to interrupt you for a second.
Right.
We're
primarily interested in Section 7.
Oh, well, all right.
And
well,
Section
right
7 of the bill appears, and Representative Winkler has probably already zeroed in on it.
Seven and get out of here.
It's not that the rest of the bill isn't fascinating to us.
Oh, it's fascinating. But I wonder why you were so interested in snowmobiles and all these registrations, but it's good practice, Mr. Chair, to go through all of this.
But if we could zero in on Section 7...
Well, Mr. Meyer will come up here, and he's going to laser fire on that part for you.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members to the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The language on Section 7 from 5.31 over to the bottom of 6.2 just states that we'll adopt rules in compliance with the changes in this bill dealing with our snowmobile registration and trail stickers, and that the rules are exempt from the rulemaking statutes in Chapter 14. What this will do is just say, here's the process. The fees are going to be changed. They're going to go from when you buy the snowmobile to an annual cycle like our ATVs and other machines are. So to go through the whole Chapter 14 rulemaking process is time-consuming and rather expensive for us just to make changes that comply with the changes in the law. And basically, and then the other piece that says the rules are subject to 14.386, and notwithstanding paragraph B, the rules are continuing in effect until repealed or supersede. We've spent a lot of effort, and I've talked to the committee in the past about this, cleaning up the DNR statutes where we do have authorities to make simple decisions that deal with prices, or the prices of camp firewood, for example, or the prices of a permit, when they should be issued. We do have expedited rulemaking authority for establishing fishing and hunting seasons. We want to make sure that the statutes don't become fogged up again, if you pardon my expression, by not being clear where and when our rulemaking authority is. So this is language we'd like to put in bills that deal with these types of decisions.
Representative Winkler, you have any observation on this exemption?
The question,
Representative Winkler.
Chair, Representative Dill, does the Department of Natural Resources have the implicit trust and good faith and feeling of the people of northern Minnesota in your experience?
Representative Dill.
If you'd have been in my committee, Mr. Chairman, a few days ago, Mr. Meyer and I were like two gladiators, so that can be sometimes a question.
Then my only comment, Mr. Chair, would be that... I think we should be more likely to, in more cases, use the expedited rulemaking process rather than exemptions from rulemaking. I'm not going to amend it or vote against it, but coming to this committee, I think we're doing way too much of this already.
Mr. Meyer, is there a cost to this rulemaking?
Mr. Chair, members, going through this process, it would be very minimal.
What's minimal?
We'll be able to absorb it within our operating costs. Probably just the publishing. And you just see it has publishing in the state register. It would probably be less than $1,000, Mr. Chair.
All right, then with the 4% cut to your department, that will hardly be missed.
Mr. Chair, members, those charges would come out of the operating expenses from the snowmobile account.
All right. Now, there's an amendment, Representative Dill, an A1 amendment. Is this your amendment that you need to put on? It's coming around now. If you need to put it on, we'll put it on here for you.
Representative
Dill, why don't you explain your amendment before we move?
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment we'll give to Mr. Meyer. It's a technical thing that he wants to have put on.
All right, Mr.
Chair, members, the A1 amendment you have before you actually comes with help from Mr. Shepard in just tightening up, going to Representative Winkler's question, tightening up what this rulemaking authority actually is for. So you'll see it's actually for the section 1 through 4 in this bill, I believe. Mr. Shepard, if I stated that correctly.
Mr. Shepard, why don't you explain what the amendment does?
Mr. Chair, members, this amendment just clarifies that this rulemaking exemption is only to implement the changes that are specifically required in this bill, that it's not all the topics that are covered by sections 1 to 6 in the bill, but that just, and it's only the first time when they make the exact changes that are required, needed in rule to comply with this bill, that the rulemaking exemption would apply.
Mr. Shepard, we may need to keep this amendment handy, given the bills that have gone through.
Representative Lankford.
Mr. Shepard, in putting the word initial in front of that, is a term of art that's used in this kind of statutory section?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, as the sentence originally was drafted, it just said that the rules required by the section are exempt, and it was my understanding that the author's intent was to just make the first time they do this to change their rules, because it's pretty much outlined in law what they have to do, that only that would be exempt. So that's the purpose of the word initial.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard, you think just that word is adequate to convey that? You do this all the time. It's kind of my
Mr. Chair and members, yes, in this case, I think it is.
And it could survive a gladiatorial contest? I would hope. All right, I will move the A1 amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dill, we're going to stay just with Section 7. Is there any further discussion of Section 7? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm being a budget hawk today, but I do think that as explicit as these changes are, that I think it makes sense to not have to go through the thorough rulemaking process, even the expedited process. I would just want to be assured that the snowmobiling associations and individuals have been part of the input of these changes, and I've been standing in for the rulemaking process enough so that this committee could be satisfied that we can exempt the initial rulemaking.
Mr. Representative Kalin, I certainly am intimately involved in this sport and these other sports as well, and I've discussed this with the associations and their lobbyists, and I have received absolutely not one single negative comment on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think that we should be cautious about always requiring rules where there's clear direction in statute like this, and also the input process has been thorough enough, not to exempt too many things from public input, but I think in this case and others, we can achieve cost savings by doing that, and thank you for making it work.
Any further discussion to the bill as amended? Anyone else wish to testify? Then I will renew my motion that House File 3068, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Dill, why don't you just stay there, and we'll go with House File 3547, the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill.
Okay. Can you move? You move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
I will move that House File 3547 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
And Mr. Chairman, rather than go through this extremely lengthy bill, let's have laser fire on this one.
Well, we're interested in Section 36. If someone would hand to either Representative Dill or to the testifier. Those are the, you've got it. All right. Those are the issues that we're concerned with, and if you just walk us through those parts of the bill, that would be sufficient.
I'm going to have Mr. Bogus here from the department, and a lot of these things have, again, to do with, obviously, rulemaking and expedited rulemaking, all of that, so I think I'm going to work with Mr. Bogus to walk through these parts.
All right, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for the DNR, and Section 36 is a provision that was added into this bill. It was not originally a DNR proposal to establish a master bear hunting outfitter license that would allow, currently we have bear guides, this would allow additional persons to be added to the license, and this section says the commissioner shall adopt rules for qualifications for issuance and administration of the licenses. And just on that section, before I talk about the other two sections, the department is working on revamping the bear guide license rules through a planned permanent rulemaking process that typically takes a year or more to accomplish, and we could incorporate this into that that planned rulemaking process. So I I don't know that there would be any incremental increase in cost if that's what's envisioned by the bill, is that that would be incorporated into another process that we're already, that we've already done some preliminary work on, but is in the early stages. Section 52 on page 24 is requiring an increase in the pheasant bag limit after the 16th day of the season, and authorizing the commissioner to use the good cause exemption to change the rules to allow for that. And then section 53 again relates to bear hunting and changes the process that we currently use for the bear hunting permit drawing to allow person applying in that drawing to select an alternate permit area in addition to their primary area that they're applying for, and also to require that the fee for the license be paid up front rather than after the person is selected, and that fees be refunded or held if the person is not selected, and authorizes the commissioner to use the good cause exemption to adopt those rules.
All right. Any discussion? President Kahn.
Did you say this bill was going to finance?
Yes. It's event, so it's probably going down your area, I would have. No? Not? All right.
I have financial issues.
There's an amendment, Representative Dill, is that correct?
that's correct, Mr. Chair. It's the A5 amendment.
Representative Dill, is this a bill that went through your committee?
Yes, it is. So we're
and why are we adding it here?
Well, we're just trying to get it in. There's so many more things coming through, you know, Mr. Chairman, that we're just trying to get things added in. This was not, the department was in accordance with this, that was in agreement with this, and our committee had no objections to this, and so we're just trying to get it put on the bill. And the rulemaking on line 2.6, as again, rulemaking, so we don't have to come back here. If we go to finance with it, and then they refer it back here because of the rulemaking, we just make more stops. So we're trying to do it here to streamline the process, expedite. Expedite the process, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shepard, on the amendment on section 56, can you explain section 56, the rulemaking part of this, since the it isn't part of our initial sheet.
Mr. Chair, members, and I hope Mr. Bogus or Representative Dill can correct me if I don't understand the substance of this correctly. But the first sentence of section 56 tells the commissioner the substantive result to adopt rules to allow taking fish by spear by non-residents. So that's a legislative direction. And then the next sentence says that they can do that by using the good cause exemption, so they don't have to follow the entire rulemaking process to implement the requirement to allow taking fish by spear by non-residents. They would just change their rules just to do that, nothing else, publish that in the State Register, have it approved by an administrative law judge, and then without any further process, they could amend the rule only to accomplish what the first sentence says in that segment.
Mr. Bogus?
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Shepard explained it very clearly. We've had a few of these in the last few years where the intent of the legislature was very clear on what needed to be changed in our rules, that this authority was specifically given to us, and ALJ reviews it to make sure that we have only done what the legislature clearly told us to do, and then we're able to update our rules without having to go through a lengthy full process.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, I'll move the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dill, to your bill as amended. Anything else?
Ready to move forward, Mr. Chair. Right. Expediting.
We will. I'll renew my motion that House File 3547, as amended, be passed and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Still waiting for Kathy. We're down to Representative Lawford. There she is. Where's this going? Representative Loeffler, you have to tell us where your bill is to go, and I'd be careful on that.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. And
good morning.
I'm always open to wise counsel and advice. I have not heard of any fiscal implications being raised on this bill.
So you anticipate this bill should then go where?
I was pondering whether the general register was a good place, but I am open to suggestions.
Hang on one sec. All right. Representative Loeffler, after consultation, I'll move that House File 3933 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as way of a bit of background, I should let you know and members in the audience know that this bill is a bill that I initiated on my own. It wasn't brought to me by any interested group of citizens, and it has to do with access to the kinds of information that we need to do our jobs as informed policymakers. And long ago, when I began my career, it was as a state employee doing education policy work. And I believe that all state employees saw themselves then and still do as professionals dedicated to helping the state do its best in their area of responsibility. And I still think this is the case, but it seems like there's been a bit of a change. And it seems that there's an increasing perception of being a member of the executive team as opposed to the legislative team, and a sense of being sometimes either disloyal or even prevented from answering legislative questions and responding to information requests from legislative staff. And it's in the past 3 years, I've had encountered increasing confusion and resistance from state employees. I have a constituent when I greeted him and said, who had recently changed the state job. And I said, hi, how's the new job going? And he said, great, but I've been told I can't talk to legislators about it. I mean, even just something as simple as that. A few weeks ago, I had called an agency program manager and asked, said I had some questions about how a program was working as I was trying to develop this bill. And she responded, I've just been told I can't talk to legislators. And I said, well, these are basically informational questions. I said, how about if I talk at you? And you can just tell me whether or not I am misunderstanding the program. At least that way I'll have a baseline of where I'm starting from. And it's gotten to the point where I think it's interfering with our ability to do our work and making a lot of people uncomfortable in ways that I don't think they need to be. And I do respect and understand that the governor's office staff and his appointees have a unique role to play in explaining and advocating for his proposals. But I think most of our state employees should be hired as our nonpartisan professional staff to all state decision makers, much as House research functions in the House. When I served on this committee, I was in the minority, and I have never sensed any difference in the response that I get from Mark Shepard, wise counsel, from now that I'm in the majority. You get objective, basic information. We make the policy choices. We decide where to go, and that's, I think, what most state career people would be most comfortable with. We currently have laws that protect the right of the executive to keep their budget proposals and policy initiatives under wraps until they have the big press conference. It's not to do it, deal with that issue at all. It's simply to say, as you look at the language, that executive branch employees are expected during their work hours to be resources to all decision makers and to provide timely professional assistance to both executive and legislative decision makers and their staff in understanding the current service and finance system and the potential impact of changes on that. It provides that workload concerns can be addressed by management and mediated by them. It says that if an executive branch's employees responsibilities include advocating for the executive's efforts, if that's just noted in their job description. And then because there seems to be such a chill with some state agency employees feeling afraid to even just answer sometimes even informational questions, we have provided here whistleblower protection, as it's commonly known, but a new reason for which you cannot discharge an employee under 2.20, which basically says that if an employee in good faith believes provides information that they believe to be truthful and accurate, that that's not a basis for discharge. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be glad to answer questions.
And Rep. Loeffler, it's too bad you hadn't expanded this to Minuscule employees. They're apparently regularly told they can't communicate with legislators, or maybe just certain legislators.
Mr. Chairman, actually, I thought Minuscule employees were state employees, but I leave that to your committee to learn all those details again. I forgot.
Rep. Loeffler, there's a fine line, but this bill would be interesting to amend in that fashion. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion to the bill? No further discussion. Anyone wish to testify on the bill? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that House File 3933 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Representative Nelson, you've got the next one. All right, we'll bring him up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. The bill I got before you today is the Workers' Compensation Advisory
Committee. Mr. Nelson, why don't you make your motion as to where you want this to go?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we, House File 3566, go to finance.
All right. And Mr. Nelson, again, on the sheet that Mr. Shepard has provided, there are just some areas of the bill that we're interested in, so if we could focus on those areas.
That's what I'm trying to do. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
This is the Work Comp Advisory Bill, and there's a letter in your packet that, again, the Work Comp Advisory Committee, Commissioner Swigum, David Olson from the Chamber, and Ray Walder from the AFL-CIO have all signed off on the bill and agreed to. This is the bill that's coming forward this year. As we said, the Section 7 is the part that we're here to talk about today, the expedited rulemaking process. And what we are doing here is by reference adopting the Medicare relative value fee schedule as the fee schedule for workers' compensation. And also giving the commissioner the ability to update this as it goes on. And this saves money for the system, which is how we're going to pay for the expanded benefits to injured workers, and allows them to update them and add new charges or add new procedures to it as they come on board, which would normally get paid for under the usual and customary charges of the hospitals, which is generally at a greater cost to the system. And that's what we're here to do about. I have Patricia Todd here, the Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry for workers' compensation, if there's any questions. But basically, that's what we're doing. It's the last time that they have updated these, and my memo here that I got, they approved these in 2001, and it took 2 to 3 years to pass them. So those fee schedules are based on 97-98 information, and this will allow them, as the bill says, every 2 to 3 years at least, the commissioners should look at these and update those charges, and so that they can remain current.
Ms. Todd, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Patricia Todd. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Workers' Compensation at the Department of Labor and Industry.
And do you have any comments you want to make to particularly these sections of the bill? No, you're fine. Any other discussion? Seeing no other discussion, then Representative Nelson renews his motion, which was, go ahead.
Move it to finance.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, I think we're finally ready for you. Is that amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have...
Representative Gardner, I'm going to move that House File 3238... be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair, that would be fine. You might want to...
We should have the second engrossment. Is that correct?
The one that's not stapled, just to show how financially prudent we're being. We didn't have any staples. But it should be the revisor's file copy
I thought it was passed out.
Had it.
I thought it was. Representative Gardner, if you would confine your testimony to those sections that are on Mr. Shepard's sheet. And did you get the...
Yes, and that would be just fine.
All right. Thank you.
House File 3238 in the final section of the bill, no matter what engrossment you have, has an extension of the life for 2 years of the Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee, which is being administered by the Met Council. Met Council staff is here available to answer any questions about the fiscal impact, and I believe the impact of the state is none. I don't know if we still have to go to finance, but I do have an author's amendment, which I'd actually
right,
leave another second.
Nobody has the second engrossment.
Well, we gave it to the page and maybe we'll put it on the thing here.
And we wait, there's the page.
The other fellow.
We're losing engrossments and pages. Can't find a page. He took the copies and left.
Go back to Happy Trails.
Yeah. You know, he probably did. All right. I think he did.
Yes, he did. Maybe the Republican page. I don't know.
We have a very highly paid page here.
Yes.
It's been one of those days that it's just a bad hair day to start with.
Amen,
I know you did.
Thank you. All right. Representative Gardner.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3238 in the next to last section, which is on the last few pages, extends the life by 2 years of the Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee. This committee is... Mr. Chair, I actually have an author's amendment to delete another section. Should I do that first?
Representative Gardner, we're trying to make sure that the author's amendment works to the second engrossment. And you probably have a copy of that. Mr. Shepard?
It says delete section 6, and that should be jiving with the second engrossment.
All right.
So we're cool, Mr. Shepard says.
All right. So I will then move the A5 amendment. And Representative Gardner, why don't you, before we adopt it, why don't you tell us why you're deleting that section?
Sure. This would be for an ombudsman on groundwater contamination. It's a good idea, but it's not ready, and there's no money, and so I'm just taking it out.
All right. Representative Gardner, does that change the referral to finance? Do we need to send the bill to finance then with that amendment?
I do not believe it needs to send to finance. The PCA had a fiscal note on that section, but now the section goes away. There was a fiscal note on a previously deleted section, so the Department of Health says no need to go to finance.
No need to go to finance.
This may have an effect for the Met Council, but not for the state, by extending the advisory committee.
All right. Let's adopt the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. And then I'll withdraw my motion on House File 3238 being recommended to pass and be re-referred to finance. And then I will move that House File 3238 is amended be placed on the general register. That's where we are. So is there any question to the bill as amended? Seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Gardner.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty, I believe, is next.
Thank you.
Representative Hope.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I would move that House File 3729 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Representative.
I believe the concern, Mr. Chair, this committee would be with Section 1, which is described in the bill as the establishment of the Legislative Energy Commission. What I think is significant about this bill is that what it actually does is, I think the term might be, morph the existing Legislative Electric Energy Task Force into the Legislative Energy Commission. It does not change the membership of the current, it doesn't change the number of members of the commission as reflected in the task force. There are 20 members of the task force. There would be 20 members of the commission. The task force has assessment powers that would be transferred to the commission, and that's something that I think is more of a matter for the finance committee. Basically, Mr. Chair, what this does is simply broaden the focus of the current Legislative Electric Energy Task Force to a more general consideration of energy issues. And I think that current circumstances certainly warrant that expansion of the scope of the task.
So, Representative Hilty, where you're saying the $250,000, is that the current funding of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, and you're just...
It is, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion to the bill? Representative Kahn.
Again, we don't see the repealers.
All right, Representative Kahn, you want to make a comment on the repealer?
No, I want to keep it.
All right. Representative Addison.
Representative Hilty, I guess I'm not quite understanding why we're going to be replacing a task force with this full commission. What can you give me an explanation? Is there something the task force is not covering?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, there is. The specific mission of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force and statute is to focus on issues regarding the generation of electricity in the state. What I hope to do with this bill is broaden, is basically keep the same group as already exists intact, and rename it and redefine its function so that we have a legislative entity that is actually focused on energy issues in a broader way. I can give you a very concrete example of that. In recent years, there has been an emphasis among utilities to convert coal-fired plants and to build new peaking plants using natural gas. That's fine with regard to emissions questions, but what it ignores is that natural gas production in North America peaked several years ago, that the price of natural gas, as anyone who pays their gas bill knows, has increased enormously, and that what we're doing to a very large extent is using natural gas to create heat which generates electricity, and then in many instances turning around and using the electricity to generate heat. Just an example of the kinds of things that need to be considered about our energy use in the state. We're not doing that currently because the focus is generally too narrow. I think that the intention of the Electric Energy Task Force when it was created, and it's sort of the brainchild of Representative Osmond, was to have a broader focus.
She has told me on numerous occasions that she is greatly appreciative of the effort to do what this bill does.
Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, isn't that why we have a Public Utilities Commission? Isn't that why we have a Department of Commerce? All these other departments that we have, what I really don't see the need for making this a full-time legislative type operation when we have all of these other commissions that are available to us to search out these questions or raise these issues that you seem to have concerns about.
Representative Anderson, it is not the role of the Public Utilities Commission or the Department of Commerce to make policy in the state. It is the role of the legislature. And this commission would, as the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force that is currently in existence does, with a somewhat narrower focus, focus on those issues to inform itself and make recommendations to the legislature, policy recommendations.
Mr. Chair, but the way I understand it, you're making this like a little mini legislature, and so that the rest of us will not have any input on it.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, first of all, if we do nothing with this bill, the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, which is structured in exactly the same way that this bill proposes, will continue to exist. I will continue to be co-chair of that, and we will continue to do what the task force is tasked to do in statute. The only thing that would happen if we do not pass this bill is that we will maintain a narrower focus than I think is appropriate to contemplate energy issues in the state.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, I appreciate your bringing this to my attention yesterday and talking to me about it. And I understand the need to broaden the focus, whether it be of the task force or this new commission. My question is whether or not any legislators or any private entities can bring issues before the commission, and if so, how can they do that? Or is it the way I seem to read this here that the commission pretty much decides what comes before it?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, which was created in the early 90s and has existed up until now, has functioned essentially as a legislative committee. It's jointly populated by members from the House and the Senate, and its procedures mimic those of the legislative committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, let me give you a scenario. Through the years I've been here, I've started off with great caution voting for the ethanol subsidies. I had grave concerns with it. As time went on, and each time we debated the issue, which was generally quite contentious, I would listen to both sides, and I continued to struggle with it until I realized a significant factor being overlooked that I think should be looked at by a commission of this nature. And I further learned some things that substantiate very serious concerns with what we've done with regard to water consumption, energy consumption to produce energy, and how much more efficient it could be to simply burn corn in homes and use the fuel saved from those homes, from heating those homes, in other ways, like in vehicles, and we'd be much further ahead. I tried to get the body to require a look at that on the floor one day with an amendment, and this kind of commission could give it a good review. How could I bring that before the commission?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, pardon me, Representative Olson, I guess the difference between the commission and a legislative committee is that you would not have to have a bill in order to do that. The commission is established and certainly open to consideration of many of the issues about which you have concern. We've discussed this on more than one occasion, and
I think that your concerns are totally appropriate to be brought to the attention of a body that comes together basically to deliberate these broader energy issues.
My last follow-up, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, I appreciate your understanding of what I'm communicating. I am concerned that if the appointments to this commission were such that they had a bent towards ethanol, that if I came forward with this concern, I wouldn't get a hearing. And if there isn't something in the bill that gives some instruction and creates at least some leverage for legislators to petition the body, so citizens can come to us as legislators and bring the concern to us, so we have some leverage to petition this body to review these issues, I'm afraid that it's simply going to produce whatever flavor it's made up of through the appointment process. I appreciate what you're doing. I see some merits to what you're doing, but I see that as a weak spot in the link.
Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, I guess all I can say about that is that it's certainly my intention, and I believe that it would be the intention of certainly the membership of the current task force, and I would anticipate that that membership would pretty much translate to the commission as well, to look at all of these issues as broadly as possible. As regards to ethanol in particular, I do not have any great commitment to the ethanol industry as it's currently structured. I think that at this point, many, if not most, legislators regard the current industry as a bridge to a different kind of industry in the future. And that's really something that I would hope the commission would address in a lot of ways.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, I'm looking on page 3 of the bill here. I see that you redefine biomass. Can you tell me why?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, because the definition as it currently exists does not include aquatic plant matter. And as you're probably aware, one of the promising technologies that is currently being developed is to grow algae and convert it into biodiesel fuel.
Mr. Chair, does the current definition, though, include mixed municipal solid waste? And so are we now excluding that?
Representative Hilty, Mr. Shepard might be able to help you with that if you need some assistance.
That would be welcome, Mr. Chair. I can say that there are various definitions depending on which section of statute you're referring to. Some of them include mixed municipal waste, some of them do not.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm looking at the definition of biomass in the current law that governs the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, and it states that biomass excludes mixed municipal solid waste.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, has this been seen by the Ag Committee at all?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, this concept has been discussed with the chair of the Ag Committee. It has not been heard in the Ag Committee. It was referred to the Energy Policy and Finance Division, which I chair, and the issues, the policy issues of the bill, I think, have been thoroughly vetted, and that's really not the reason that it's before this committee.
Representative Anderson, he's correct. We're focusing primarily on the areas in the Shepard memo.
Mr. Chair, I understand that. I apologize. But I would like to recommend to Representative Hilty that he has this seen in the Ag Committee, since we are redefining what biomass is. I think that's a pretty significant
Representative, and this is being re-referred to science, so it's going back to science.
Science, and then will it go to Ag then?
Well, it could go a number of places. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, as I said, I have discussed this bill and this concept with the chair of the Agricultural Finance Division, and he hasn't indicated any interest in seeing it, but if he wishes to see it, he's a member of the Finance Committee, and we can have that discussion in Finance.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, I noticed that one of the repealed sections, Subdivision 8A, deals with the Manitoba Hydro information. Is it intended to do that? And is it considered that that section, which was supposed to expire in June 30th, 2010, is no longer necessary?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, the reason for that repealer is that Senator Pretner Solon and I, as co-chairs of the task force, have already communicated what has been asked for in the Manitoba Hydro section to the proper Canadian officials, and in fact we are jointly meeting with the premier from Manitoba at 12 o'clock today.
Right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I assume that covers by January 1st, 2008, but it doesn't quite cover each year thereafter.
Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I think that we have proceeded in a way that is capable of putting that issue to rest. And I don't believe that there's any point in maintaining this in statute.
Representative Holtz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, under the subdivision 6 provision on page 2 under hearings, would you be open to a provision there that would identify that they must give a hearing to requests submitted by a majority of a House or Senate committee?
Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, the last sentence in subdivision 6 says that any other report that the commission deems necessary to review can and should be heard, and I can't imagine a circumstance in which a request such as you described would not be considered by the commission, if that's the reason that it exists.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, well, the language there simply says that the commission deems necessary, and it sounds like we have another trust situation like we did with the Commissioner of Education, and we seem to be in a trusting mode today, so maybe I'm going to have to go with it.
Not all of us, Representative. Any further discussion?
Why couldn't this be yesterday, Representative?
Representative Hilty, why don't you renew your motion?
I would, Mr. Chair, renew my motion that House File 3729 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee of Finance.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Oh.
Motion prevails. Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Oh, no minutes today. Then meeting is adjourned.